This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The FBI has just completed a nationwide sweep that led to the arrest of 150 pimps and the rescue of 105 children who are being forced into sex slavery. It's called the Innocence Lost National Initiative. Of the 76 cities involved in the nationwide sweep, more pimps were arrested in Metro Detroit than anywhere else, 18 arrests. And with 10 children rescued, Metro Detroit was in the number two spot in the nation. It's a harsh reality check to remind all of us that children as young as 13 are being forced into prostitution, perhaps being held in hotels and motels that you drive by each and every day. We wanted to take a closer look at this problem of human trafficking in our state. Elizabeth Campbell joins us in the studio. Elizabeth is a staff attorney at the Human Trafficking Clinic at the University of Michigan. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you very much.
So were you at all surprised that Metro Detroit led the nation in the number of pimps that were arrested?
No, I wasn't. I mean, I'm not sure that we can say conclusively that that means that we have a larger problem here than any place else. I just think that we all have to face the fact that every American community has this problem and that this is just the tip of the iceberg, unfortunately.
Why do you think there was such a high number in Michigan?
I would like to believe that it's because we just had really great cooperation amongst law enforcement here in the state. Again, I don't know if it means that we have higher numbers. Certainly, we have certain factors that make us susceptible to human trafficking. Metro Detroit has experienced, obviously, some economic strife, leading people to vulnerability. We are a border state. We don't think of ourselves that way because we're not on the southern border, but we are at the border with Canada. And it's one of the most active business borders, if not the most active business border in the country. So there's lots of traffic going through, truckers, et cetera. And so I think that we have to be aware of the fact that Metro Detroit has reason to have a higher level of activity of commercial sex trade.
When you review the details of the sweep that was just went down, and we see there's a Madison Heights, it was a 17-year-old girl rescued from an Econo Lodge. She was being held and beaten. In Flint, there was a 911 call that led police to a house, and they found two 17-year-old girls being assaulted and forced to be prostitutes. Farmington Hills, two 17-year-old girls working at a local hotel. Southfield, you had a 17-year-old rescued from a hotel. Romulus, another 17-year-old rescued from a house. And then in Detroit, a 16-year-old rescued from a hotel. And there had actually been information about her posted on the website. So with these stories don't surprise you at all?
Unfortunately, no, for a couple of reasons. First of all, I was born and raised in Flint, attended the Flint Community Schools, and I know the sort of economic strife that exists in communities like that that can then be sort of utilized in the suburbs, right? Like where these young women are originally from, we don't know. And then at the clinic, I represent currently we represent 52 clients, of which approximately 20% are U.S. citizens that were born and raised right here in the state of Michigan. And the majority of those people are victims of sex trafficking. And they range anywhere from – I've had clients that were 16 years old. I currently have a client who's closer to 30 but had been forced in the commercial sex trade for 6 years right in Metro Detroit. And so unfortunately, I see those numbers and my thought is let's figure out how do we get help for them, but it's not shock and awe.
So – from the outside looking in and hearing this, the first question that has to be tackled, and you can answer this based on the clients you've worked with, Elizabeth, how do they never get a chance to run away?
So I think that we can underestimate the power of psychological coercion. Very commonly within instances of sex trafficking, what we're talking about are young, vulnerable individuals who have had a pretty hard go of it their entire life. And what pimps can offer to do is love them, quote unquote, unconditionally. No matter what they do, they come home and they have a place to go home to, and that's with their pimp. Now, it's not what we envision to be love, but it can be stability in a way that they have never known before. And I often equate it back to it's taken us quite some time to understand domestic violence and why a woman will go back six or seven times to her husband. And it's a very similar psychological condition of dependence, isolation, and resources. And it becomes very scary to leave because they don't know at what risk themselves or their family, both of whom may be threatened.
And with these girls, not necessarily the ones from these cases. This is all very brand new. But with the youngsters that you have worked with at the Human Trafficking Clinic, are there people looking for them? Are there loved ones who are looking for them, or have they pretty much ruptured ties with home and family?
It just depends on the circumstances. We've seen both. But for the most part, there's usually some family somewhere that at one point was looking for them or is actively looking for them. We had a young woman who was in Grand Rapids but was originally from a state in the South. And she actually came to the attention of law enforcement because her grandmother was just calling, posting her all over the internet, putting her on the National Missing and Exploited Children's List, found her in Grand Rapids, and called the local police. So there, you know, but this was also a young woman who had been in the foster care system for the first 14 years of her life. And so there's family there, but there's often the situation where, you know, it's just been a difficult childhood. That isn't to say that it can't happen to people who have, quote unquote, from the outside, lovely, perfect lives. And yes. So we just have to be aware of the fact that young people, particularly women, are very vulnerable in this society. And one of the things that I really want us to take a look at is it's wonderful that so many young people, minors, were recovered. But I'm concerned that there were a lot of adult women mm-hmm. who were engaged in this practice and who weren't properly assessed for victimization. They're often, if you're over 18, you're a prostitute, and I'm not going to have a different conversation about what's happening. And I'm really concerned that we missed an opportunity to identify adult victims of human trafficking and offer them alternative services.
And it was amazing to me to discover something I was never aware of, that there's actually a federal law that prevents states from prosecuting internet companies that run escort ads that are linked to sex trafficking. How is this not a major push in Congress?
Well, it's complicated. And I think that one of the mistakes that we can make from the outside is to say the answer is to go after Backpage.com, for instance.
Sure.
Backpage.com being one of the primary websites. The reality is that doesn't actually eliminate demand. It maybe just further entrenches demand into areas that we have less access to. So one of the things that I tell people is, when Backpage.com gets a subpoena from a court or a law enforcement mm-hmm. officer, they're really compliant and cooperative. And so I'm afraid of those websites being pushed maybe to a Chinese sort of server across the nation or international, and we can no longer have cooperation. So rather than say, how are we stopping the way it's being advertised, why aren't we dealing with the demand?
I did see that police said public tipsters played a very, very big role mm-hmm. in finding many of these children in this last week's sweep with the Innocence Lost National Initiative. Who offers important tips? In is it neighbors? Is it hotel workers? Is it sometimes Johns?
All of the above. We have had a couple of instances where it wasn't so much a John, but in a forced strip club case, for instance. Mm-hmm. One of the individuals who went to the strip club thought something was up and said, what's going on? I think everyone who's willing to keep their eye open and treat everyone that they interact with as a human has an opportunity to help here. So the service industry in particular, whether it be sex or labor trafficking, is ripe for exploitation. And part of the problem is that we go about our day and we don't interact with the person in front of us. If we talk to them, for instance, we represent a group of young women who are exploited in a hair braiding salon for multiple years. They worked like 14-hour days, 6 days a week, and they were underage. And finally, someone noticed that one of the young women who'd been braiding her hair for 2 to 3 years kept saying she was 18 years old year after year after year. And it clicked that this was a person who didn't speak English as her native language, and so she had been trained to say she was 18, but that had never changed. We all have an opportunity then to sort of say something's fishy. And so I often say, people, I know we've been raised to think, don't be nosy. I think maybe it's time we're a little nosy. And the wonderful thing is the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, which is a 24-hour hotline, you can call it. And that gives you the opportunity to leave a tip anonymously if you wish to say, is this human trafficking or should I be concerned about it? And so it gives the community a really easy way to get involved.
Easy and safe.
Yes, exactly.
Now, in your experience, Elizabeth, once these children and these adults are rescued from either labor or sex slavery, how likely are they to rebuild their lives? I guess I'm wondering, does lost innocence equal a lost life?
I think we all have to acknowledge that it's hard. So part of the problem with the criminal justice response is that they're rescued and they all throw their hands in the air and they say, yay, and they think it's done. So much of what my office does in a legal capacity is make sure that we identify the resources that they need to move forward with their life. It is a long, hard process, but I would say that with the proper resources, most of our clients, if not all of them, have successfully changed their lives. It's hard. They don't have income. They don't have resources, but they are so excited at the possibility of making choice again in their life that they really embrace the possibilities if we're able to offer them resources.
Elizabeth Campbell is a staff attorney at the Human Trafficking Center Clinic at the University of Michigan, and we will be putting up a link to the National Human Trafficking Resource Center for everyone to be able to access and keep that handy. Thanks so much for talking with us today, Elizabeth.
Thank you.